Let's go ahead and proceed with our next case, which is case number 60446. Okay, Wesley Swarczak, I'm sorry. Swarczak, okay, versus GKT II. Okay, the party's ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Sagnor, you may proceed on behalf of the appellants. And do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I do, 7.5 minutes.
Okay.
I'm going to go really fast.
May it please the court, your honors. It's been a long time. Before I get started here, I want to let you know that you know me as a trial lawyer, not an appellate lawyer, so this may not be what you're used to. I hope it is at least understandable. Mm-hmm. This case is really, in my opinion, straightforward. As I look at the answering briefs, there's one thing I did agree with, and there was a plethora of cases in the opening brief that probably had I written this brief would have been a lot shorter. The key issue in this case is duty and its analysis. And so when you look at this particular case, my client comes up on the middle of a three-lane roadway going south on Mills Boulevard. He comes up to an intersection of Cary. There's a red light. He waits for it to turn green. He starts to go through it. And on the west side of the roadway, where the defendant's property is located, a sign lifts up. He collides with it and is seriously injured. The only issue here is whether or not there's a duty on behalf of the landowner.
Counsel, let me back up before we even get to duty. Wasn't an issue of whether or not the sign was actually on the property?
No, there's not, Your Honor. That's something that was raised in the answering brief for the first time. And so when you look at page 26 in the first appendix, you'll note in their moving papers that they indicate that the sign is in fact located on the west side of the property, which if we get to that stage of analysis, I'm going to argue, and I believe that I'm right, that we're outside of the duty part of this, but into the causation part of this. And so that argument is fervently raised in the answering briefs for the first time, but not in the underlying summary judgment motions. In fact, they acknowledge that they came from that side of the road. They don't say located on our property. They say located on the property on the west side of the road. And that comes from the police report. And so in Nevada, the issue now becomes, how do we analyze duty on behalf of the landowner as it relates to people off the land on a roadway, and whether or not they have a duty to ensure that activity that they authorize or don't authorize is in fact not going to interfere with people on the roadway. And that really is the crux of this case. Now, there's a second and lesser important, from my viewpoint, aspect to the ruling of the judge. She includes findings of fact that she believes, I think, are important to her conclusion that they just don't owe a duty to inspect their property. And then Mr. Anderson comes in and files a motion and says, look, I think there's additional findings of fact that need to be part of this. And they argue 59E. And when they do that, they basically say, look, number one, we don't think any of the additional seven factors that you have are relevant to the underlying ruling of the judge, which is there's no duty to inspect your property. Number two, there's four criteria that, under one of which, if you meet it, you can bring these new issues of fact in, and you don't meet them. But they kind of skip over the one that says, in the interest of justice. And so when you look at Mr. Anderson's reply brief, that's the one he lands on. Obviously, he says, look, in the interest of justice, if you're going to look at facts and use them, you need to look at all the facts that relate to the discovery that we did do and the information that we found out about these landowners. And so when you look at the answering briefs, they jump on all the questions that you wanted to ask in the initial motion for summary judgment. And they list them out, all 12 of them. And when he took the depositions of the respective landowners, he learned some positive things that helped our case that would create this material issue that we don't believe even get to until you've determined whether or not there's a duty. And so our hope is that you understand the difference between the foreseeability analysis that you do when you're analyzing duty and the foreseeability analysis that you do when you're talking about pause graph type stuff and zones of danger or whether or not it's foreseeable that somebody could be injured.
Can you do this? Can you clarify this factually what's agreed to and what isn't? I mean, we're trying to figure out whether it appears that the landowners didn't give their permission to put any signs on this property, but also say there wasn't, to their knowledge, there weren't any signs there. Is it conceded that there was maybe a sign placed there they didn't know about or didn't give their permission to, or is it still in dispute if the sign even originated from their property?
It's a dispute in the answering briefs, but it wasn't in dispute during the underlying summary judgment motion that I can see anywhere. And in fact, when they point you to page 26 of the appendix, they just indicated that, hey, according to the police report, the sign came from the west side property into the roadway and the motorcycle collided with it. And so as I look at it, I go, the things that aren't in dispute, and you'll notice in the reply brief that they list the things that Mr. Anderson tells the court, look, I want an opportunity. Don't throw me out yet. This is your basic 56F. Let me do some discovery before you toss me out. Because I want to know some things. And he lists all 12 things that he's interested in knowing. And he doesn't get what I would call, from a plaintiff's perspective, a positive hit on all 12. But he does get a positive hit on a few of them. And when you read the answering briefs, it's almost as if Mr. Anderson's 12 questions all have to be answered in a positive way, in a way that the plaintiff would want them to be answered, as if he created his own test. And it's some 12-part test. And they harp on it over, in fact, they repeat it twice in both briefs. And so, here's the undisputed fact to answer your question. The defendants own the property jointly. They have no one else who is authorized to use that property. They are the sole owners and the sole people responsible for that property. There's no one else. They can't say, well, we hired this other company to do something, or we're allowing this other entity to utilize it also. That's what we think is important. So if anybody does control this property, it's these defendants. The second thing that's undisputed is that things have been left on this property, debris, and it's not until the government comes in and says, look, you need to go clean up your property, that they go to the property and clean it up. But for the citation, they don't inspect, they don't manage, they don't do anything to regularly monitor the property at all. The third thing that's not in dispute is that this property abuts a roadway. Three lanes going south, three lanes going north, and a couple more turn lanes. So this is a well-traveled area. This is an urban area where they know that their property abuts up to a well-traveled area. I got about 10 seconds before I use my 7.5 minutes. But the issue, the first hurdle, is whether or not people who own property that they know abuts to a well-traveled roadway in an urban area have a duty to monitor and maintain that property. And given that, we believe they do have a duty to act reasonably, and that duty is expressed in Ashwood. It's a generic, kind of an all-encompassing weighing test that they talk about, and how to evaluate whether or not there's a public policy benefit, a cost problem, a knowledge problem, an insurance availability, and who's to be protected here. Who is the important person in the room? The landowner or the person on the roadway? We submit as the person on the roadway.
Counsel, before you sit down and started with this question, in terms of the statement, I went back just to check the language, at least in the order. The police report may say something different. It says the west side of Menace Boulevard. It doesn't even say from the property. Is that a correct statement that was in
there? No, it was a correct statement from the police report. The police report relies after the fact, obviously. He's not.
I understand that, counsel, but this is what's in the record, and that's why I asked the question. What is the proper verbiage? Is that correct?
That would be the proper verbiage from the police report in terms of where the sign was located after the accident. But when you look at the testimony of the client, he says it comes from the west also. So there's a couple of, and we also acknowledge that it's windy. You know, it's another thing you ask what facts are not disputed.
Thank you. Counsel?
May it
please the court. I'm Sunil Sylvester and Plenick on behalf of respondent GKT2 LLC. I appreciate the court's question about the undisputed facts in this case, and I disagree with counsel's position with respect to the disputed facts. In fact, in the motion for summary judgment, the only sole recital of where the son was located is the fact that we referenced the police report, which says it came from the west side.
Was it referenced in his response to the motion, the position of his client that it came from?
His client says it came from the west side. Our client, during deposition testimony and in the transcript of the hearing, firmly provides that he had never seen the sign on the property, that when he had driven by, there was no evidence that the sign had ever been on this property. While we don't dispute it came from the west side, certainly there was no evidence in the underlying case that the sign was ever on this property.
The sign was identified as to what it was for, what it was advertised?
It was a political sign, Your Honor, and again...
Oh, it wasn't for a judge candidate.
I'm not sure that we were a judge candidate. I'm not going to say that, but it was a political sign, and it was up during the political season, apparently. Counsel says that there's no dispute that there was debris on the property that my client had been cited before. That is incorrect. There was never debris on this particular property. What my client testified to in his deposition was that he had other properties, and when there was debris on the property, he would receive notice from the county and he would clean it up. But there was never any notice provided to my client that there was anything ever on this raw land, this vacant dirt. Appellant is framing issues with the court, I think, much more broadly than is supported by the record below. First, the first issue is, did the court err in determining that the appellant failed to demonstrate any factual issues to create an additional duty for the respondents for this in this particular situation? Additionally, there's the very narrow issue before this court of whether the owner of vacant land has a duty to inspect that land to protect passersby from artificial conditions placed on the owner's vacant land by intervening third parties. In the disposition below, Judge Alf found, after allowing the appellant to conduct extensive discovery, deposition discovery, and after hearing all of the evidence, that the appellant did not meet his evidentiary burden that the respondents either knew or should have known that that sign existed on their vacant land, giving rise to liability to this particular defendant. Remember, this land is raw dirt. There's no commercial activity on it, and the evidence in this case was that the respondents never gave permission to any third party to post signs on their property, didn't lease any portion of their property to advertisers, never granted a license to any third party to use the property, and never had any contractual relationship with any of the defendants that admittedly, and there's a default judgment against them, placed those signs on the property.
Were these people deposed, and there's a default judgment against these political marketing associates and enterprises in London and Sheriff Norman or some, these people located or?
Never located, Your Honor. A default judgment was entered. Mm-hmm. In addition, there was, as I explained to Your Honor, there was no evidence before Judge Alf that the sign was ever on the respondent's property. And on that basis alone, this court could affirm Judge Alf's decision. But Judge Alf also found as an independent basis that the law in Nevada related to premises liability doesn't need to be extended to include a duty of owners of vacant land to inspect their property to discover those artificial conditions caused by unknown third persons, and in this case, trespassers. I'd like to focus this court's attention on the state of law as it exists today, and that's really under Moody. And Moody provides that a landowner has a general duty of care and the determination of liability depends on whether the owner of the land acted reasonably under the circumstances. Appellant is asking this court to engraft into Moody the general duty of reasonable care includes an inspection, and that's all the findings of facts that the appellant wanted included in when it did the motion for the amendment of the judgment. The court found that there was no duty to inspect, and so Moody doesn't require such an extension. Extending such a duty to include the duty to inspect would create an unreasonable burden on the landowner. As a policy matter, if this court extends Moody to include a duty of inspection, how far does that duty then extend? Is it a weekly inspection to decide if a trespasser's coming to place something on your land? Is it a monthly inspection? You know, is it an inspection more if you are next to a roadway as opposed not next to a roadway? And so that creates the proverbial slippery slope that's not warranted in this case. Additionally, the general duty of reasonable care encompasses the duty to protect from foreseeable harm. In this case, not only was there an intervening act by a third party, but there was an act of God, which was the wind. It's not reasonably foreseeable that an artificial condition placed by an intervening third party is going to be lifted up by a gust of wind and injure a passerby. So whether or not the landowner acted with reasonable care to protect against that foreseeable harm is a factual determination and was determined by the lower court and doesn't require an extension of the law that is encompassed in the duty of care. I apologize.
No, I interrupted you. I apologize. To the extent that it may or may not be relevant, what concerns me here is the argument that you're making is, you know, how far we adopt this duty and how far do we extend it. And then, given the facts of this case, we have a motorcycle. Would the duty be different if you were in a car? I mean, the injury to a motorcycle driver, albeit a beautiful machine, apparently, is different than the injury to someone in a vehicle might have been.
I think the court has landed exactly on why the law should not be extended to include such a duty. There's certainly no way, and it's not reasonably foreseeable to know whether motorcycle is going to be coming down the road, a car, a van, a semi-truck. I mean, again, it goes back to the foreseeability of harm and what's reasonable to protect the duty of reasonable care. The case law cited by the appellants with regard to the duty to inspect all involve artificial conditions that the landowner, or natural conditions, some were trees, that the landowner either knew or reasonably should have known existed on their property. In the instant matter, the landowners didn't know, have any reason to know, of the artificial condition that someone else placed on their property, and it was not reasonably foreseeable that an act of God was going to cause injury to the appellant. Thus, there's no reason for the court to extend the present state of the law. And I will now give my time to my colleague.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Douglas Dewison on behalf of the respondent, Aaron Arnold. I want to touch on something briefly that the appellant raised, which was the issues of fact. As this court is aware, what does a non-moving party do on a motion for summary judgment? They try to raise a genuine issue of material fact and dispute for purposes of defeating that motion. We don't concede that the sign came from our property, but for purposes of the motion for summary judgment, we don't dispute that issue because we are not trying to shoot ourselves in the foot by raising an issue that he can later latch onto and say, oh, that's an issue you, District Court, should have considered, where the sign came from. For purposes of getting a decision as to our duty of care, the definition of our duty of care, and then the scope of that corresponding duty, we concede for purposes of that motion only that we're not going to contest where the sign came from. So be it. It came from our property for purposes of that motion. And even if it did, we're not liable, and we lay out in our briefing the reason why we would not be liable. I believe the controlling case in terms of the duty of care in this is in part Malucci versus Larson. And the reason I looked at that case is the importance of it is because the district court had a job to do, and their job pursuant to that decision was to define the duty owed in relation to the particular circumstances and to define the legal standard of reasonable conduct in light of the apparent risk. So one, they define the duty of care. That's reasonable care. Two, they define what the boundary is for that reasonable care, that reasonable conduct that the respondents have to exercise. And the court, district court, in this decision stated the boundary or the extent of the duty of reasonable care does not include a duty to inspect the property to see if other unknown third parties are making unauthorized use of your property. Would we have to drive out there if we had a duty to inspect daily, hourly, monthly? Would we have to hire a 24-hour guard to standard to make sure that nobody ever comes on our property and makes an unauthorized use of sink. That's a slippery slope we don't want to travel down. That's the issue of duty to inspect. If I'm running an activity on my property, running a business, one of the cases I cited to talk about a livestock business being done, I would certainly be responsible to inspect that the activities that I know of are being handled appropriately. And I'd be responsible for foliage and other artificial conditions that I'm aware of. But my duty would not extend under the law, and there's no case law anywhere in the country that says my duty would extend to inspecting my property at some unspecified interval to see what other people who have no relationship to me might be doing. Number two, I cited in my brief for Alan Arnold the restatement of torts, specifically 364 and 368. This court can look at it as guidance. But the reason I cited it was because it sets forth that a possessor of land, their duty corresponds to whether they with having created the condition or knowingly permitted it to remain. That's not the case here. We don't know that it was there. We never knew that it was there. And we didn't authorize anybody to put it there. Our duty to take corrective measures regarding things that we know are there corresponds to whether or not that artificial condition or activity poses an unreasonable risk to others who come into contact with it. This was not touched in any of the briefs, and I want to raise it here. These A-frame signs, there are hundreds of them throughout Las Vegas. Every political candidate makes use of them at election time, which jumps the number of these signs up into the hundreds, if not the thousands. Our clients, if they had seen and observed those signs, they wouldn't have removed them from the property because they pose an unreasonable risk of harm to somebody. They don't. They're signs, hundreds of them. This is an issue of first impression. How many times has any of these signs blown over before and injured somebody? If it had, then there would be a foreseeable risk of injury, and that issue would have been before this court sometime in the past, but it hasn't. It's a sign. They don't blow over routinely. They don't routinely cause accidents. They don't routinely cause injuries. If they did, people wouldn't put them up. So that's the issue as well. Irrespective of
that, I think you make a good point that we've seen Clark County, and I don't know about other parts of the states, probably every piece of vacant land in Clark County and the metropolitan area, somebody plants, you know, either A-frames or paper signs or whatever in every election season here. Should landowners just protecting their own properties be examining them for this type of trespassing signs and all?
Well, I think the issue with respect to that goes to timing then. What is the frequency with which they have to inspect for that? Mm-hmm. They're not anticipating that other people are going to make illegal use of their land. That is illegal. I mean, it's either dumping or it's trespassing at a minimum. Mm-hmm. Are they responsible for that? That's an intervening, superseding cause. Now, in some of the other cases like Sayalaba, you talk about, you know, the duty of care, foreseeable conduct, criminal conduct by other people. We're not doing anything. There's not a vacant building like in Sayalaba where somebody can commit a violent felony against somebody. It is a dead, empty zone of land. It is no use to anyone other than if you sell it and somebody builds something on it. They should not have a duty to go and inspect, especially when they will always be second guess on the deal.
That's probably what Ron Nellis and Carey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Unless this court, and I don't think it would want to, delineate and set forth a hard and fast rule of, if you own vacant land, you have to go out there every month and check. Who knows if our clients have gone out there every month? That sign could have been put there 2 days before it ended up blowing off. Obviously, to the appellant, that won't be reasonable if they only have to go out there once a month. No matter how often we go out there, so long as something happens with somebody else, let's say you didn't act reasonably. So essentially, every private piece of land would have to have a wall erected that's 10 feet tall and armed security guards to make sure that no third person ever shows up there and puts anything on that property that might later hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that is the principal issue that is before this court. It is not an unreasonably dangerous instrumentality. It is a sign. Hundreds of them are utilized. it is not something where anybody who owns land would reasonably be worried or concerned about the existence of that being on their property. As I was going to say before, if our clients were going to take action about that site, it was simply because somebody put that there and is getting free advertising, making use of their property without paying them for it. They wouldn't rush out there to remove it because they're thinking, oh my God, what if that hurts somebody? That would never be a consideration, or every property owner in Las Vegas would be out with trucks 24-7 pulling these signs off their properties.
Thank you. Mr. Sagmiller.
Thank you.
Maybe you could pick a follow-up, or both counsel pointed out for the respondent. If we agree with you, well, how would we define the duty of inspection? What is a court, how could we do something that would be reasonable to the public and deal with the situation like just a state of plan, motorcycles versus maybe semis and different types of vehicles traveling down Dallas or Cary in that area?
I admitted that as the first thing to talk about, Your Honor, as I listened to both counsel. The test, whether motorcycle, car, semi, airplane, whatever, when the land is next to the roadway that is used for those purposes, would be what would be reasonable. And so if you're asking me what I think is reasonable, I think it's reasonable that they do something. I don't think it's reasonable to have a landowner who, number one, knows that people dump on their property, knows that political signs are put up every election season on every vacant land. They know that. At least their council knows that, and we know that. Does nothing. To have somebody say, well, my best defense to a lawsuit is to completely ignore my land and to do nothing about it, I think it's not.
Well, let me ask you that. So let's say hypothetically you're selling jury instructions, you're back in court, we're at trial, the three of us are the trial judges. What type of jury instruction are you going to propose to us to consider to instruct a jury on in this type of situation?
Well, in this particular case, I would argue jury instruction number 9, common sense, which is always number 9, it seems like every time I do have a jury trial. And the second thing I would argue is that under the weather conditions, for instance, if we were in election season in the last 3 weeks and there were A-frame signs all over my property, I'd be real concerned. And let me try to illustrate the point that I'm trying to make. If you're going to say, look, landowners have no duty ever to inspect, because land is just sacred somehow, and the people that own land don't have to ever inspect it if it's vacant, unused land. Well, number one, when you're in an urban setting in Las Vegas, it's not unused. It's used for signs. And if the winds kick up to 50, 60 miles an hour, I would be worried as a landowner. Think about this. I thought about trying to make this point understandable in the context of this case. I went back and reread when counsel made comment that this particular land had never had dumping on it. And as I reread the deposition testimony, it was part of the opening brief, they're right. They actually say, any of the properties that you manage, do you inspect them? And they say this, no, unless we're cited by the county. So that's hypothetical. Somebody dumps on your land. The debris is pretty easily lifted by the wind. And you don't do anything until you're cited. That's like saying, I don't ever drive a speed limit until I get a ticket. They don't cite, it's not the county or the city's job to run around and inspect your land for you. They're citing you for failing to manage, failing to inspect, and failing to keep your vacant land clean of debris. They're not doing it for fun. It's not just a revenue generator. It's for safety. Mm-hmm. And so if I got a citation from the county who drove by and said, wow, there's like 20 A-frame signs on this vacant lot, and every morning I'm going to work, there's thousands of cars run by here, and the wind's getting pretty heavy, and they're looking pretty shaky, I'd probably cite the landowner and say, you need to go take care of your land. Because that's the only place they have to go to, the people who own the land, who admit they're in control, undisputed, admit that they have no inspection policy, undisputed. What if the land were, let's say, a landlocked parcel that didn't have any highway? I think that would be part of the factors that are expressed in Ashwood. And Ashwood is a more recent case than the case cited by counsel. And they use that case. And basically what they say is, look, you look at everything. you look at all the different aspects of the circumstance involved. One of them is, who is the most important person here to be protected? Is there a roadway? If you've got a landlocked land, it's 10 miles away from the roadway, then I think that the causation aspects, it would be one of the few cases that Paul's graph really would be applicable. Mm-hmm. But we're not there yet. We're talking about duty. And so what they're asking this court to say is there is no duty. And I just find that strange. I mean, the county thinks there's a duty to keep dumped debris off of your vacant land, even when the people that dump it there do it without your permission, do it illegally, do it as trespassers. Why wouldn't that extend to people who litter your land with signs that once you jump into the causation end of this and you're outside of the legal end of it, questions of fact? And that's why we think that the questions of fact that we wanted added are important, because the judge is saying, I'm going to throw you out of court because I just don't think there's a duty to inspect. And these questions of fact that you want added, I'm not going to consider, even though no one disputes them at all. They don't dispute them. You both agree on them, but they're just not important to my decision. And they should be important to your decision because, number one, under the summary judgment rules, we have a right to have you evaluate all the facts that we believe are in our favor. And number two, I just think that when you look at what's in Ashwood, the public policy aspects of that require the landowners to do something. And certainly, if you ask me to draw the test out for you in a jury instruction, my jury instruction is probably going to be pretty all-encompassing, and the defense jury instruction is going to be, we have no duty to do anything ever, hide your head in the sand, and that's our defense. And you are going to make me come up with something I'm assuming that would be in the middle and reasonable and follow the law. And I think that we're not asking you to stretch. We're asking you to clarify. I don't think it's a stretch to make landowners in this setting inspect their property. Just like I think in this setting they have a duty to inspect their property and make sure no one dumps on it. They know these things happen. They just admitted it. We all know it happens. So for them to be able to defend against it by just saying, golly gee, I didn't look. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank both sides for your excellent arguments and briefs, and we will take this matter under submission. We'll call it in recess for the next call to court.